All right, who are you and why are you here?
Yeah, I'm Charlie Murray with Heavy Bikes, also Foundry Casting Systems. Foundry Casting Systems is a machine builder that we do pressurized solidification through an automated process, and that enhances sand casting. We started doing work for the military in 21 and a bunch of research for a couple different folks, and they wouldn't let us talk about it, so we started making bikes so we could talk about our pressurized solidification at Foundry Casting Systems, and making bikes is fun, and we aim to sell bikes now as we debut here at MADE with the heavy bike Hypocrite.
Okay, go ahead. You know, you're talking about your technology there. What makes it different from traditional sandcast type world?
Traditional sandcasting, everybody casts generally with hope. They fill their mold, and then they hope that it meets specification. After that, if it doesn't meet, they go through a process called hipping, which is hot isostatic pressure. And they go up to 14,000 PSI, and they distort the part. We apply pressure when the molten metal is still liquid, and it doesn't hit fractional solids. And so as we apply pressure, our environment enables the riser to act like, instead of a 6-inch riser, act like a 40 or 50-foot riser. And that head pressure increases mass feeding, which then improves density because the part fills out more completely. Therefore, you get better elongation, better tensile strength, and a better part.
Well, like in most motorcycle applications and some of the bicycle applications, we'd see more rapid die casting.
Yep.
And how is this advantaged over a rapid die cast situation?
Rapid die cast is generally chosen. Like, I've been in plants for Harley-Davidson headers, and their volume is so much, and their lack of variety it warrants the ability to go into a die casting process.
It's a large number of manufacturing. You can do
parts,
that because you're
exactly
cutting an expensive die.
Correct. And in this, what we're doing with heavy bikes, we're leveraging the expertise of arguably one of the best tool makers in the world, Liberty Pattern out of New Liberty, Iowa, to make 3D printed sand molds for us. They leverage all their experience in the games of aerospace and other high industrial applications, and we apply that knowledge base and their years and generations of tool building to make the tools for heavy bike. And those tools are tested with all the best software programs from Magma and EKK and Altair to make sure that we give you a part every time we print a mold, we give you a bike.
Okay. When you're doing the sand cast, you're paying to print each of those sand cast molds.
Yep.
And then they're broken for each bike.
Yeah, with the sledgehammer. No other bike here is made with a sledgehammer in the process. It's really fun. It's exciting.
Sure.
And it's kind of like Christmas morning.
It's Christmas morning. Exactly. Yeah.
But the neat thing is you get a peek into the present because the risers, which are generally at the top of the mold, the risers that come out of our Pascal process at Foundry Casting Systems are piped. In an aluminum casting, you never see a piped riser. You generally see a flat top riser like you see at the top of a bottle of water. It's a flat top, right? Because water levels out. But because of the pressurized environment, we're piping, which means that last molten piece of metal is being shoved back into the part where it needs to be.
It's almost like a die cast.
Almost.
Just because of that.
But because,
just a little positive
exactly.
On
but because
side.
We're making custom every time as a custom bike, even if it is a 3D printed tool, we can get there because the pressure affects all six sides because the sand casting is porous. In the future, if we get to the success point where we can afford to buy a tool that we could make a standard 56 every time, let's say, then we would still have a sandcast tool, but it would come out of a tool that eliminates the 3D printer from it, and that would lower our cost of operation.
Almost like you'd invest in the positive so
correct.
That you can make your molds, so that
very
you
good.
Can make them,
yeah.
You know, just like, what do they call it?
You've done this before, Peter.
Well, a lot of people here are not new at this.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, there's a lot of inspiration
we've played,
at this
we've been
show.
Playing games, right?
Yes.
And I think, what do they call it? There's a word for making an investment in your positive for doing sand casting.
Progression.
Skateboarding does.
Yep.
Skateboard world does that now.
Yep.
Where they've got expensive positives that
yes.
they're putting in there.
Yes.
And like you're saying, like that would be the next step
yep.
if you were looking at doing more production
oriented. Yep. And then, you know, the next thing that I really want to go to, if I can dictate where the company goes and spends money, it's an alloy development.
Sure.
Because the game really is to progress to a steel alloy with some very neat additives out there. There's some
Why in any way would you be interested in steel for a technique like this?
I like the idea that a steel bike lasts the lifetime of the rider. There's a fatigue life to aluminum.
But that's not true.
There's not true.
No. Steel is not magical.
It's not.
It
magical.
Is a material.
It is
just
a
like
magical.
Aluminum is. Yeah. Since they're both materials, that means you can choose one.
It is, but the fatigue life of steel versus aluminum lasts a little longer.
But I mean, in engineering, there are processes, and there are materials, and then there are applications.
Yes.
And depending on what we're doing and how we're getting there, we're mixing this process that lends itself to this material that will solve the problem this way, but that means we have to design it in such a way.
Oh, we have to redesign the whole bike. Absolutely.
Sure, sure.
Yep.
And,
yep.
Offhandedly looking at it and knowing enough about bicycles and bicycle design,
yep.
And also cringing when people talk about steel bicycles.
Okay.
Even as someone who makes steel bicycles.
Okay.
It's like, well, shit. Why? Since this technology and type of manufacturing works very well with aluminum.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you design an aluminum bike? why would you target steel if you'll end up with a worse bike in the end type of thing, or it makes the manufacturing harder?
We just had a really exceptional experience with steel in the Rock Island Arsenal Foundry with a Steel Founders Society project with Foundry Casting Systems. There's a paper coming out in December that'll talk more about
that.
Sure,
but artillery is not the same as a bicycle.
Correct. And it's, you know, I've been suggested to check out ductile iron is another way of making bikes, which is ludicrous. Like, nobody's making that.
Yeah, and I mean, I've heard ductile iron is very similar to cast iron.
Yeah.
Which is fucking ludicrous. It's like, why don't you make a glass bicycle?
Exactly. Right. And it's more about, okay, I need a tool that transcends the intellectual property of the foundry and the tool maker. And so by owning the bikes, we can kind of transcend and play around with it. Whether it makes sense in terms of coming to the bike market, I agree with you, it's probably ludicrous. But it's a fun experiment to try.
Okay, that's fine. If you're just trying to learn stuff, that's different.
Exactly.
I'm in the I want to make a sick, awesome bicycle.
And I think
world.
Aluminum's the way to go.
It seems to me like that would be the way to go.
And we started there.
If not magnesium, but the thing is,
magnesium failed.
What?
Magnesium failed in the 90s.
Well, I
Kirk Precision, I believe it was called.
Of course.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we all know.
Yeah.
We've been around.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The thing is that a failure is not the same thing as a technology failure. Like,
correct.
What he did, how he did it, and in that way, at that time, it may have failed in the marketplace or mechanically, but the thing is that here we are now. What are we doing now? What can you leverage and manipulate so that you're doing something rad now? And it's like, well, is aluminum or magnesium better? And the thing is, as we're seeing in front of us, these two iterations, obviously this is looks like Gen 1-ish, that's Gen 2, and there's an amazing amount of progression between the two.
Thank you.
Right, of course. And the thing is that, okay, these are, what, 8-pound frames, I hear,
Eight pounds, a little bit over 10, yep.
Right.
Yep. I think I can get this one inside of 6.
Sir, so we're on our way to developing competitive weights in that area.
Yep.
But then from a design and engineering standpoint, what does the shape look like? Like, when I look at the rear end of a lower to mid-end motorcycle, which you're typically going to be using rapid die cast and even
some
front and rear subframes of most motorcycles are rapid die cast.
Yep. The volume.
But the thing is, it's like maybe the front of a motorcycle represents a lot of how the front of motorcycles have always looked.
Yep.
But the rear swing arms look very different from how rear swing arms have traditionally looked.
The Germans do it different than the Japanese versus the Austrians.
But there's something that the die casting process is like you end up engineering that.
Yes.
And because very few people other than the Kirk have done a cast frame.
Yep.
Well, there's been the round of thermoplastic frames that would be essentially an injected frame.
Yes.
And this type of thing, you're kind of in a very different world than other people play in.
Yes.
You know, monocoque's really big right now. Tube to tube is really big.
Yep.
But like a cast environment, very few people have done it.
Yep.
And what, and then we say, oh, but did they actually even use good engineering?
Yep.
And the thing is, so who's engineering these chassis? And
we are.
What are they after?
We're after, you know, optimally, we do an FEA analysis, pretty extravagant FEA analysis with a compliance model to get a better ride quality and to provide a safe platform to ride a bike. That's key. Safety is number one and compliance is number two. We want the bike to feel good. I've raced multiple disciplines from triathlon to TT to track to crits, and gravel is really where my heart is. It combines both the idea of going long and, you know, and going fast if you need to. And this bike, I think, trends towards that way. The Hypocrite does. I just got to ride it for the first time yesterday. I mean, we finished the build on Wednesday morning, and I bombed out of Forest Hill and had a ball. And it really has its own sense of momentum because it isn't a hollow tubular structure. And it gives you that combined with its nimble wheelbase. It really gives you a
It's nimble,
feel.
Poppy, and playful.
I wouldn't know if I would say it was poppy and playful, but it definitely goes where you tell it to go, and it definitely carries itself in a different way than any other bike I've ever ridden, for what it's worth.
Sure.
Just a dude.
Right, right. I mean, there's ways we look at that from a...
It's a terrible Cat 4 cyclist on a track, you know?
Sure. I mean, but that's, you know, from an engineering and design point of view, there's ways we look at bikes and bike geometry in terms of evaluating what they're going to do where and how and all that stuff. But the thing is, I don't think that's the subject we're talking about here. We're talking about cast aluminum as a material
we're
and method.
We're casting nerds. And we said, let's make a bike to communicate the benefits of the Pascal process.
So what modeling environment are you using and what tools are you using
there
for this?
We're using Alias for the surface modeling, and then we're transitioning from that wireframe output to a SolidWorks environment.
Okay, so you're wireframing out of Alias. You've generated most of the stuff in surfacing, and then you go solid.
Yep.
Okay, and then from there, you are going to do your FEA.
Yep,
probably
within SolidWorks,
right? And then you're gonna be like, okay, we got it dialed. You got a couple of datums established. You got some tooling planned out for your cuts because you got to clean some things up.
Yep.
And then you're sending that model itself to your mold guys, or are you designing the mold?
We're sending it to Liberty Pattern, and they're leveraging their experience, and then we've got some other folks we're working with at like Craft Pattern and Mold.
What does that mean, leveraging their experience?
Well, tooling folks, they know how to make sure that your gating and your risers and everything are going to fill the part. And the difference is you have to teach them about the benefits of pressurized solidification, and so you can overcome. Maybe you approach it differently. You use more spherical risers versus cylindrical risers. EKK's software.
And those risers, and I'm not a casting nerd.
Sure.
I don't know all these things.
Yep.
The risers are in your pouring and your molding, not in the design of the end product.
Correct. And the risers are there to ensure that the part fills out. So when you fill a mold, you start with a sprue cup. It goes down the sprue across the main gate, and then it goes up and fills any other gates up as it fills the part. Gravity feed, pushing the gas out the top. The risers are the last things that fill, and they're the last things that solidify. And those parts of the tool fill the part as gravity feeds it. When you put it into our machine at Foundry Casting Systems, we physically squeeze more of that molten metal that remains in that riser back into the part.
Right, you've got gravity working to your advantage to make a higher pressure push.
Well, and we've created a physically higher pressurized environment.
So you're adding pressure.
Yeah, we're adding pressure with, generally we use nitrogen, but we can use any noble gas.
Okay.
It's a tool. Use our machine however you like. It's your money. But we create that environment. Now, different alloys work differently with the noble gases. Some alloys don't enjoy an argon environment, so you go with a nitrogen environment. You know, you could go into neon. You know, all kinds of, there's seven different noble gases. We have a gas engineer that wants us to check out an argon with a 2% hydrogen environment, which is ludicrous, but it's going to be something we're going to test out later this year. But the nitrogen environment is what we've cast all these bikes with, and you remove heat faster. So when you get to, what we found is when you get to a pressurized environment before fractional solids occur. So molten metal, fractional solids on aluminum A356. I don't have the table in front of me, but it's generally 610 degrees centigrade to about 560 degrees centigrade. And that's where your solidification happens. Below that, you're solid. So we want to get to pressure before fractional solids occur, and then we fill the mold by squeezing the risers to push more metal into there. So on a cylindrical riser, when the mold comes out of the machine and it's broken apart, you'll see the riser, and instead of it being flat, it'll be piped. There'll be a literal funnel of metal going into it. It's a spherical riser. It will look like a deformed version of the Death Star, right? You know, that Death Star in Episode 4 of Star Wars, it was an incomplete, so it's an incomplete sphere. That's what all of our risers look like. And so generally, where the sphere is deformed is relevant to where the sphere is in relation to the outside or the inside of the mold, because the inside of the mold is going to be hotter than the outside. So then it's going to deform to the inside because the outside cools faster. Mm-hmm. So it's all thermodynamics. Mm-hmm. And then when you utilize technologies, like the next software platform we're looking forward to use is EKK's solidification software. They have a pressure variable in their software, so we can model our environment that we're actually casting in. And that's what's most exciting about what we're going to do next, is really leverage this technology that we've developed at Foundry Casting Systems and exhibit it with the bike.
So when you're adding that pressure, I mean, are you seeing a lot of like hysteresis effects in the model, the molded item, or in the mold itself?
We're seeing a lower solidification time by a double-digit improvement, and we're seeing a mass feeding improvement of double digits.
I'm talking change of shape.
We're not changing the shape at all. No.
It doesn't change it at all.
No, that's the benefit of using the Pascal process versus hipping. Hipping, you're going to distort the product because it comes out hard, it didn't meet spec, and you still have porosity that you're trying to squeeze out. So you send it to a couple different folks throughout the United States, have hipping capacity. They charge you per pound, and they literally squeeze the porosity out of the solid part.
Uh-huh. Cool. You are the designer for these bikes?
I had a team, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Got a few folks that are kind enough to work for us Moonlight Style. Uh-huh. They come out of the automotive industry and the ATV industry. And we also have a compliance engineer from a testing systems company. And we leverage a lot of folks in the Minneapolis and the upper Midwest that, you know, it's been really, I guess, my favorite thing. And if I could take a moment to just thank everybody that I've proposed this project to come aboard, they've always jumped in head first, and they've been very generous with their time, and we really thank the folks that have worked with us. They know who they are, and it's been really great, and they've enjoyed it, and it's really fun to ride a thing that comes out of your head like this.
Yeah, it's always nice to ride what you built. Now, surface finish comes to mind because in the world where we're doing a lot of 3D printing,
yep,
and there's various different qualities of finish that we're getting,
yep,
around all that.
Yep.
I'm looking at these surface finishes, and I know these are early and everything like that. How can you manipulate surface finish in your product, say, to improve that from what we're seeing?
Yep. So we've got a couple different machine designs we've been working with some folks on, where we're going to essentially, the goal I want for heavy bikes is you sit down with our fitter, one of the best in the world, Chris Balzer at Bike Fit Guru, and then after that you'd sit down with a tattoo artist. And then the only logo we have is the logo on the front head tube of our bike. The rest of it is your art project. And we want to etch the frame either with lasers or physical grinding.
And every customer has to get a tattoo.
Well, tattoo your bike. I don't have any tattoos. I've just got scars from biking. But yeah, we want to be like, the gentleman I met in April, he said he could give me a duck feathered top tube.
Sure.
So it would look like feathers on a duck's back.
So you're doing a highly customized
art piece, yes,
type of thing,
yep,
that the customer can influence.
Correct.
So that they're paying for something that's extremely personal.
Yeah, if I could be so bold, I would really like to outfit every NFL lineman,
uh-huh,
with a bike that will give them the transition in retirement to, you know, a life of continued health and wellness by getting them out in the woods. You know, the Japanese prescribe more walks in the woods than anybody else versus SSRIs. I think putting somebody on a bike that inspires confidence because it's engineered for sizable adventures. We take all the confidence issues that are associated with common tubular welded frames and we say, here's a bike that's built to your geometry and your mass. We increase the thickness of the sections. We FEA it. And we add a safety factor to make sure it's compliant. You can carry a load of gear.
I need to get a button on my computer that says FEA it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, then I can do that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's like, you know, I understand you're selling here. We're at a trade show. you know, but we are.
I haven't sold anything yet, Peter.
But you know, there's a lot of people here that, you know, FEA, it means a different thing when we hear it.
Sure.
You know, a lot of us are tuning rides. A lot of us believe people should be riding bikes more and everything like that.
Yep.
So these are not new concepts in this crowd.
Nope.
And the thing is, what I'm trying to see is, like, how are you solving, like, the down tube shape? Why does your down tube look that way versus another way? You know, especially when we look at, say, the monocoque or tubular bikes.
Yep.
We're familiar with that.
Yep.
The thing is, it's like, okay, this is a different type of thing. Why does it look like that?
Well, you know, we don't have the constraint of a tube. We knew we were going to cast a bike. We knew that...
Well, in essence, you doing a tube is the hardest or more difficult thing for you to
totally.
Do.
Totally. Because
So it's not that it's a constraint. It's just that's not necessarily an option.
Correct. I was using constraint in the idea that that is what your stock is coming from. Since we're pouring our part, we leverage the idea that what do we build buildings out of? We started with... You're not seeing the frame here that was zero. So 0, 1, 2, because that's how we count, right?
Sure.
So zero went to the ACT lab out in Long Beach and met the Trekking ISO standard. So it got tested. It worked out. And it started out, as you can see here in our one rideable prototype, it was an I-beam. Well, we quickly found out in the finite element analysis that we didn't need the bottom of the I-beam, so we carried it a T-profile. And then from there, we quickly found that we didn't need much in the vertical compliance of the T-profile, especially along the top tube. So the top tube can arguably be very dainty. We worked with Jason Walker and some other folks at The Ohio State University, and we talked to some other folks about FEA, and we just said, hey, what happens when you do this, and what does generative design teach us? And generative design is a fun tool, but it also doesn't really appease the market, because the market is expecting a double triangle set. So is UCI. I'm not saying we're UCI compliant, but we're pretty close from my interpretation of the rules. So we don't need.
Well, I would definitely not be building my design program around, the UCI rule book.
Yeah.
That's not design. It's not intended for that purpose.
Very
right?
good. Yeah, absolutely. But the game is we have to have tubes because in certain areas, so like the seat and the head tube and the bottom bracket, because we're not going to design all the components of a bike. But from there, we said, hey, let's get creative and have fun. We knew an I-beam was stout and strong. And then the back end of the triangle is really where we've started to express and explore what's possible. And I went to the design team when we started transitioning from the prototype to the Hypocrite and said, I would like to eliminate all the straight lines so that when people view the bike, they simply change their reaction from, is that a cast bike with a question mark, to, holy shit, that's a cast bike. And that's the scope of work we tried to hit with this bike. And so far, it seems like we've done it.
Okay. Do you have an opinion on that? Do you think we've hit that? Like, that you could tell right away when you walked up and saw it?
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt it's a cast bike.
Yep.
The thing is, you know, I look at a lot of bikes. It's like, no, I don't want to ride a lot of bikes
right.
I see. So it's like, I'm looking to see bikes that get into the realm of I want to ride that bike territory.
Okay,
or
that's
that
an even better scope of work statement.
Right. Well,
I'm going to borrow that.
That's what we're trying to do is get to I want to ride that, because it doesn't take much to make a bike. Making a bike's easy.
Yep.
It's kindergarten.
The rear triangle's not easy though.
Well, I mean, but the thing is, I assume in the foundry you're working with customers that are actually working on hard problems.
Yep.
And this ain't that, right?
Well,
in that sense.
I mean,
now rethinking how a bike can be done using a cast material versus a monocoque or a tube-to-tube type setup, that is interesting and creative work that can happen there.
Yep.
That could produce an incredible result. There haven't been a lot of people working in that space.
Correct.
Currently, as far as I know, you're the only ones working in that space.
It's lonely, but it's fun.
Right. And I know how it feels to be the only one working in a certain space.
I want to hear about your experience.
Well, I look at my website.
I will.
But the thing is that, you know, what I'm And when you were talking about we passed all the tests, it's like, well, if I was making an 8-pound frame, I'd be passing every test in the known fucking universe.
Sure.
And it's like, so what are we talking about here?
But
and
why
it's
is
like,
the skinny bike market the metric?
What do you mean, why is the skinny bike market
why
the metric?
Why is the skinny guy bike market the metric? You know, like, I've been riding a Pinarello Prince since 2008. It tops out at 180 pounds.
The medium weight in the United States is, what, 210, I think, for an adult male?
Sure.
And so the market, it's getting more present that the market actually lists the specs on their bike. And, you know, it was published in Outside Magazine a couple years ago, like, am I too large to ride this bike? Do I feel safe riding this bike? A good friend of mine bought a brand new Trek Fuel. He weighs 290. He programmed welding robots for 13 years. He goes, I know it's going to crack at the head tube, top tube, bottom bracket if I have a rough day on the trail. And I'm like, okay, so what if I gave you a bike that didn't have any welds? Would you feel more confident? He goes, I think I would. So that was kind of one of the impetus of why we did this. He's like, what if we applied all these techniques and characteristics that we use in automotive
right, suspension? Right, but I think others are accomplishing these benchmarks that you're talking about at half the weight. And I granted, I believe you're at an early stage in the development of this.
Thank you for recognizing that.
I totally understand these are early prototypes and not final drafts. I get that.
Thank you.
It's just that when we're talking about all this stuff, it's like, yes, that it's strong and it works and you can ride it at 8 pounds. How is it going to be when it gets down to 6 pounds? And then how is it going to be when it gets down to 4 pounds? Because even nowadays, an extremely heavy bike frame is in the, what, 4.25 range or something, 4.5?
I mean, the metric we're trying to chase, and I don't think it's possible, but it would be interesting. With the right alloy, I think we get there. The metric we like to go after is, like, the Salsa Warbird in terms of a gravel bike. It's kind of the benchmark. It's been around for the longest, and I think the Warbird weighs in around 4.25 on a carbon fiber, you know, version of the Warbird. And it's a great bike. It's from Minnesota.
So I'd give you 5 pounds, maybe 5.5.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this is at 8 pounds.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, you know, how's this? It's like going from 11 to 8, that's fucking easy. Going from 8 to 6, that's fucking hard.
Yep.
Right?
I'll
so
get
it's
there.
Like,
we'll get there.
I get it, and I want to see that. And it's like, do you have images of that design currently that you can show?
Oh, one of the reasons why it weighs 8 pounds is I strictly didn't have access to a 5-axis machine in time to get in time for this show.
Okay, so in addition to casting, you're expecting that you would then be on a robot or in a 5-axis to manipulate it.
Yeah. If I had $500,000 and 20,000 manufacturing of my own 20,000 feet of manufacturing space, I'm pretty sure I could get inside a 6.
Oh my God! If I had all the cocaine and hookers I wanted to, I'd have a great Friday night. But we don't get those things, right?
No, but I'm close.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a side project of a side project.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're looking at something that, when it is done the way you're planning at the end goal, you're casting a part, and then you're manipulating it in a 5-axis environment to do a bunch of stuff to it.
Correct.
Right?
And there's some artistic elements here that we're doing with the gussening.
On a 3-axis.
On a 3-axis. And if you wanted to, and let's say you're big into stars, we could change all those gussets to stars, right? But, you know, we didn't get to do a tapered bore all the way down the seat tube. Right, we just made sure we hit 27.2 mil for the seat, you know, seat post from Envy. On the front, we left a lot of material in because we didn't get access to a 5-axis on the head tube. There's a lot of material there. Our badge actually grows out of the head tube. That's excess weight, you could argue. What if we went in? That would reduce some weight there.
Sure.
Yeah. So there's a load.
But you, I mean, you showed up at a bike show, bro.
I did.
That's the thing. It's like,
but our name's Heavy Bike, so we're owning it. You know.
That's true. Yeah. It's true. It's you have a marketing genius working for you.
Well, I have a lot of fun friends, and I've been married long enough to set the expectation. right? So
yeah. Okay. All. I mean, I'm excited for it. I think it's a great space to see somebody working in.
Thank you.
I want to see the further development of it, and
I want to have
see
you,
what
I want
comes
to host
up.
You in the North Woods of Lake Superior, and take you on a ride in the gravel woods of Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm not going, but I mean, not a personal thing about you. It's just, you know, I'm going a Whistler if I'm on a trip. You
okay.
know, I'm a NorCal mountain biker, you know,
right.
So it's like, it's not an easy sell for me to go to Minnesota.
Okay.
But the thing is that, but I do believe that there's possibilities here. I want
to
see this real stuff. And, but more than anything, I mean, like, I'm one of those firm believers, if you're going to show a bike at a bike show, you would better have geometry in front of the bike, too, because generally what we see is pretty paint jobs. Your bikes don't have pretty paint jobs. You're trying to show it in the raw, obviously.
We like the manufacturing process.
Well,
yes,
you're thrilled with that, and you're trying to get that word out there. These are cast bikes.
Yep,
and
yep.
Covered it with paint, that wouldn't show up as
correct.
Much.
Correct.
I get
Thank
it.
Thank you for recognizing that.
Well,
yep.
This is a marketing den of thieves, you know? Come on. It's not my first trade show, bro. But the thing is, it's like I know that you're trying to send a message and sell and reach
yep.
out and get some hype, all that
yep.
stuff.
Yep.
Maybe an investor or whatever you
yep.
want.
Yep.
But I get it. But the thing is, it's like, you know, I want to see that you know enough about bikes to produce a proper
geometry.
Do you
want to talk about geometry?
I don't think that's a discussion we should have right now.
Okay.
How's that?
That's fair.
Right now, I want to have I want to conclude talking about these and probably take some
nice
pictures.
You want to take them for a ride?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
But I want to take some pictures.
Please.
I want to see what you produce coming up because
yeah.
I think that they're, especially since you're talking about manipulating it a bunch more
yes.
out of the casting
yes.
and the fact that I've seen, you know, I'm looking at a huge change from number 2 to number 3.
Yep.
And that means number 4 we should see
yes.
considerable change.
Appreciate
you know.
That confidence. Yes.
I mean, I've been developing forever. So it's
cool.
Like, I get it. I know
cool.
how it works, right?
Right.
It's just, you know, you're showing early.
Yes.
And it's like,
yeah.
Deadlines are deadlines. You're reaping that, you
yes.
know, when you show up rough.
Yeah.
People are going to point
yeah.
at you because you're showing rough.
Totally fine.
You know, because, I mean, we got one of the best welders in the world over here.
Oh, loads of them.
Right.
Yeah,
and
we're
it's
the assholes
like,
with the shirts on that say no welds, no
right.
worries.
Right. I mean,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like, you know, you got to.
I think welders are the most creative people in the world, for the record.
Well, no, I was just saying, it's like people are bringing very highly developed finished
and
goods
then,
here.
You know, and then you talk to, you know, Ben and Wade at Argonaut and what
yeah.
they're doing.
Right.
It's unprecedented. I've never read a more praising interview or review of any product in my entire life than I have of every time I read an Argonaut review.
Uh-huh.
And it is a bar in which we strive for.
Okay.
And I don't know if it will get there in 10 years. You know, it's going to take a while. But we're having a lot of fun. You know, this came out of my head in October of 2019 while I was running around in the woods. And we started it in August of 21. And we're here at Made in August of 23. So let's see what happens.
Awesome.
Thank you, Peter.
I look forward to seeing this develop.
I appreciate you very much for taking the time to meet with us.
All right. Thanks.
Cast Stop Bike. Take care.